You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Christine Buckley, and this is Field Talk, a podcast produced by the Ecological Society of America. In Field Talk, we learn about the work of authors whose papers have been published in the Society's journals, Ecology, Ecological Applications, and Ecological Monographs. Today I'm speaking with Dean Pearson, a research ecologist at the U.S. Forest Service Rocky Mountain Research Station in Missoula, Montana. Pearson and his colleague Ray Calloway of the University of Montana published a paper in the September issue of Ecological Applications that tells the story of a grassland community in the foothills of Montana's Sapphire Mountains. These grasslands are dominated by spotted knapweed, an invasive species introduced from Europe. These flowering plants first caught Pearson's eye when he was a graduate student studying rodents.
Back when I was a master's student with the University of Montana, I was taking an ecology class out on the hillside behind town. And once I got the class started and got them rolling and was looking at the knapweed, invasive weed that we have in the area, and it looked like rodent activity to me. And I was aware that there was a biocontrol that was lived in the seed heads of the plants. And so it occurred to me that maybe rodents feeding on the biocontrol. So I did a little trapping and found out that, in fact, that was the case.
The biocontrol agent Pearson observed in the seed heads of the invasive spotted knapweed was a European gallfly, a natural enemy of the weed that had been introduced into the U.S. in an attempt to reduce the dispersal of the rapidly spreading weed. But for scientists, selecting a biocontrol agent such as this one can be very tricky.
Exotic species become a problem, become invasive, because they escape their natural enemies in their native range. So when they come over to a new continent, like a weed comes to North America from Europe, the idea is that the things that ate it and presumably controlled its populations in the native range were left behind. And so that plant, that weed, has an unfair advantage against the native plants in the new range and explodes and takes off. And so the idea in biocontrol then is you look around, see what was feeding on it, and you bring some of those organisms over in an attempt to reestablish that top-down control and try and control the organism there, try and suppress its populations.
But scientists like Pearson learned early on that any biocontrol agent purposefully introduced into a new geographic range must have very specific characteristics.
You don't want to bring just any critter over to eat it. You don't want to be bringing over the giraffes and elephants and so forth from Africa, obviously, because they're not necessarily going to eat what you want them to. And so we try and pick things that eat only the target species. And so the organisms that come over are usually invertebrates or insects of some sort. And the idea then in screening these things for host specificity is that we make sure that they're safe. So the understanding has become that so long as they don't directly attack anything that they're not supposed to, they'll be safe. And screening for host specificity ensures the safety of biological control.
But Pearson has found that even if a biocontrol agent is highly host specific, it can still have detrimental effects on the surrounding community.
The system that we've been working in here is spotted knapweed, and spotted knapweed is a real big problem weed in the West and in general, in particular in Montana, Idaho, and the region around that, into Alberta and Canada and so forth. And to address this problem, a biocontrol program was started in the early 70s, and a number of organisms were introduced, exotic species from Europe that were brought over of insects. And some of those organisms that were introduced, many of them established, and some of those organisms have been discovered by some of our native species, things like deer mice and black-capped chickadees and a number of other species, as a food source. And so they've discovered that these things now exist on the plants, and they like to eat them. In particular, one of the organisms that's become a problem or that we've been examining closely is gallflies.
First introduced to the U.S. in 1971, these gallflies have a life history that is closely intertwined with knapweed. Female flies lay their eggs in the plant's seed heads, and when the eggs hatch into larvae, the plant grows a gall, or a woody encasement, around each larva in an attempt to protect itself. But the extra energy that the plant uses to invest in this protection is costly.
Basically, this results in is an energy sink for the plant. So the plant should be putting its energy into seed production, and instead it is putting its energy into making galls, and it reduces seed output.
Right.
And studies have shown that seed production can go down by 80 or 90%. So it's pretty effective in doing what it's supposed to do in terms of reducing seed production. Now, the problem that we see is that spotted knapweed plants can produce literally thousands of seeds an individual plant can. So even if you reduce seed production by 80 or 90%, you still have 10 or 20% of thousands, which is a lot of seeds. They're very fecund, and a plant can live, 8 years. So a plant could easily replace itself with that amount of seed. And at least at this point in time, they haven't controlled spotted knapweed. It's still very widespread and very big problem.
Pearson's instincts as a graduate student proved to be the key to this community interaction. He found that deer mice, who began feasting on these introduced flies, created more bad news for native plants.
The way these indirect effects have played out is that the gall flies actually live in these, they overwinter within these galls for 9 months, from September until June. And so during the winter period, these things are in the seed heads. The seed heads are readily available above the snow surface. And so for native consumers, this is a great thing, because for small mammals and birds and so forth, making it in Montana in the wintertime can be a real tough thing. Your other food sources sort of disappear. Mm-hmm. And so exploiting this new resource becomes a real opportunity. So what we've shown in looking at this, and we've really focused in on deer mice, is that deer mice can actually increase. They're very good at exploiting this resource. They'll actually climb up these plants, and they'll chew off the seed heads and knock them to the ground, and then go and feed on them, gather them up into piles and feed on them for the larvae that are inside of the seed heads, these gall fly larvae. They're really very effective, and they can actually process 800 seed heads in a night. Doing so, they can actually consume 1,200 larvae per mouse per night on average. So these guys are really pretty amazing predators. Because they're so efficient at this, because of the timing of this food source and the abundance of this food source, being in the wintertime when other resources are unavailable and deer mice usually decline through the winter, what we've seen is deer mouse populations have gone up. They've doubled or tripled in many of these areas. And so this has lots of potential indirect effects through sort of community interactions.
Pearson has found that increases in mouse populations disturb the community in several ways. For instance, with double or even triple the numbers of mice predators around, other sources of food begin to suffer.
Knapweed would go into the system and beat up the native plants and reduce their abundance, and that was sort of the system. Deer mice were in the system, and they were doing their thing out there. But when the biocontrol was added, knapweed still is invading new systems and increasing, but now it has this biocontrol in the seed heads. And this biocontrol functions essentially as a fruit for feeding some of these native consumers. Knapweed is directly beating up on the system. And in terms of native plants and seeds, these mice are as aggressive predators on native seeds or seeds in general as they are on insects like these gall flies. And they're very efficient at eating the seeds. And in some cases, they can actually reduce recruitment, new plants coming into native plant populations through seed predation. So again, this is not the sort of thing we want our biocontrol doing. We introduced the biocontrol in an effort to try and help those native plants. But through these complex indirect effects, we're seeing these side effects.
These side effects lead to big challenges for scientists when deciding to introduce biocontrol species. Pearson is one of many ecologists struggling to determine when and how to use biocontrols. One way to do this, Pearson says, is to make sure the biocontrols are highly effective at stifling their hosts. If they're very effective, he says, then the indirect effects won't be strong enough to really matter.
The general question that comes up is, if we can't, how can we predict this? We could predict how it might try and jump ship, as it were, and eat things that we didn't want to. So if gall flies control, or the biocontrol in a more general sense, controls the target species, then it eats itself out of house and home, reduces its own populations, and any sort of indirect effects that are playing out are liable to be insignificant and biologically unimportant.
How would you choose a different species that would be a lot more effective, or several species that would be more effective than these gall flies?
Well, so that's really where the community ecology comes into play. And we need to better understand how invasion happens, how community assembly happens. And it's really, there's not an easy answer. The answer essentially is that biological invasions are not only a huge problem, but they're also a huge natural experiment and really have provided a lots of opportunities for us to try and learn how community assembly happens. And so, when an exotic organism comes into a system and completely takes over a system, it's doing something that none of the native species were ever able to do. And it's completely reassembling that community. And what we need to understand is how that happens. What are the processes, competition, predation? What are the roles of things like competition, predation, parasitism, and so forth, if we're going to better understand when and how biocontrol can work?
Pearson thinks that a more specific knowledge of the biocontrol's life history, or the timing, behavior, and development that occurs during each stage of the organism's life, will lead to biocontrols that are more effective and suitable for not only their host plants, but also for the interplay among other organisms that live within their new community.
If we know that there's a certain life history stage that's a weak stage in the plant, for instance, in a lot of weeds, it's not the seed, because they're very prolific seed producers, but other aspects, maybe transition from a young plant to an adult plant is particularly weak. And so if you had a biocontrol that attacked that life stage, it's likely to be a lot more effective. So in the case of gall flies, although they've greatly reduced seed output, that doesn't seem to have a whole lot of effect on spotted knapweed populations. So one way in a more direct sense is to try and better understand the weaknesses of the plant and the bug that might address that.
Pearson likens his work to the medical field, where drugs often have side effects that are unavoidable, but a necessary evil of treating a bigger problem.
In human medicine, you know, we have a complex organism, we're trying to fix ailments in that organism. We use various tools like physical things like surgery and drugs, chemical tools like drugs, and these things all have side effects. We're trying to minimize the side effects of our tools and maximize our intended outcome. And how we balance that is always a function of course, what the ailment is. I mean, acne is not a very serious problem compared to cancer. So you're willing to have a different balance in terms of how you use your tools. And it's really the same game when we're dealing with biological invasions that are really a lot like a cancer.
Although trying to select the right bugs to cure so-called ecosystem cancer is hard work, Pearson says that much like for a medical doctor, it's this opportunity to improve the health of ecosystems that makes his work especially meaningful.
It's a huge, it's huge in terms of gratification of the work, I think. You know, I work for the Forest Service. I'm a Forest Service scientist, so that's part of my job description is to help managers and help manage natural resources better. I definitely have the pointy-headed side of things, and some of the research that I been trying to understand invasion is hard to sometimes explain to managers in terms of how it will pay out in the end. And one thing that you see often is that those folks are on different sides of the fence. There are the applied folks that are trying to get it done and fix it, and then there are the folks that are trying to just sort of understand for understanding's sake. And so it's nice to stand on both sides of the fence and try and sort of bring these things across.
From his own experience as a graduate student to his current research at the Forest Service, Pearson advocates that getting out into the field and learning about the ecosystems around us is really the best way to understand them.
Like I said, when I came into this, I didn't have any interest in weeds or biocontrol or anything of the sort, and it was really by stumbling onto it in terms of just making observations while being out in the field that really opened up this venue of research for me. It's really been very fascinating and very productive and enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things we miss a lot of times in teaching students at academic institutions is how to make observations and to understand the potential significance of observations when we're doing that. And I find that a lot of times the most interesting questions come when somebody's wandering around and they just make an observation.
That was Dean Pearson of the U.S. Forest Service Rocky Mountain Research Station in Missoula, Montana, talking about his work on the hidden effects that biocontrol agents can have on ecosystems. I'm Christine Buckley. Thanks for listening to Field Talk.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.